Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for this week's edition of the SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and this week on the Roundup, we're going to be taking a look at three top news stories in international education that have crossed our feeds over the last few days. And we'll be taking an in-depth look at these as and in terms of ways that they might be impacting what you do in your international admissions or international education offices on your campuses. And we'll have hopefully some content today that will help you understand a little bit more about what you might be able to do to adapt your policies, adapt your the way you approach international education in your institutions. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with the Midweek Roundup, we take three news stories each week, and we look at them in depth in relation to how they are impacting our international education profession. And we're going to be taking a look at three stories we pulled from the SMIE Consulting newsletter that was released on Monday. It's a free service from SMIE Consulting. Comes out on Monday mornings, 9 a.m. Eastern, and it's entitled All the SMIE News Fit to Share, Social Media and International Ed, SMIE News Fit to Share. And we have about 15 to 20 news stories, international ed news stories each week that we profile in the newsletter, as well as five or six social media related stories and how they can be applied to what we do in international education. So I always put the links to the most recent edition in the comments section on the Facebook page for those of you who are watching live. You are certainly welcome to comment on those as you see those, and use them as reference as you follow up on the roundup with potential deeper digging on your part in terms of what these stories might mean for you and your institution. So for those of you who are watching either on the archive version on our Facebook page or on our YouTube channel, SMIE Consulting, thank you for taking the time to watch us. But I also want to give a special shout out to those listening on the podcast and who've subscribed to the Midweek Roundup on their favorite podcast provider, whether iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, Spotify, whatever you're using, you can hopefully find us there. We hope to really impress on you the fact that we are certainly graciously humbled by what you do each week by taking the time to include us in your routine, and hope to provide at least a little bit of insight, if not some levity, onto some of the topics that we deal with each week. Now, we're going to be covering three stories, one of which is international brand building online from a recent article I wrote for one of my consulting gigs with IDP Connect USA, talking about what universities can be doing to make sure their message, their story, their brand is being consistently reinforced online, talk about how that's being done. We will spend the bulk of our time talking about the lingering impacts of coronavirus, COVID-19, on higher education, not just in the U.S., but the world. We've just received word in the last hour that WHO has finally stated the obvious, that COVID-19 is now a global pandemic, and that its impact is continuing to be felt in waves around the world. I will talk about those implications here. And we'll also wrap with something a little bit different, off the beaten path a bit, talking about pathway providers, one in particular in the United States, and how there have been some problems when talking about what one of these providers and what that might portend for other pathway providers around the United States. But let's start off with international brand building online. What we talk about here is something that I've always had a passion for since I started in the profession back in 1993. In the article here that I've just shared the link to for IDP Connect, I started at my alma mater, Marquette University, in 1993. Our institutional website was still very new, very text heavy. And we might have had a listing on a college search site. Probably College Board at the time was just starting theirs. But what we did then was very what we did online was very much down the priority list in terms of where we were spending our focus as an admissions office, as frankly an institution, on brand building. And it was in our publications. It was in our logo. It was in our sports teams. Those were the expressions of our institutional brand. Now, when it comes to modern day institutions, how we are trying to define ourselves, and this is the disconnect that often happens, how we define ourselves is oftentimes very different from how we're being defined by audiences overseas. And that was something I think Jeff Bezos, the founder of Amazon, or the CEO of Amazon, said, your brand is what the rest of the world says about you. And that may be true, but in reality, it's twofold. It's what we try and project, and it's what our audience says about us. That is, in reality, what our brand is. When it comes to colleges, obviously almost all universities, certainly flagship universities, will have their own marketing communications departments, and that will control all kind of brand-related, marketing-related online presence for the university. Smaller colleges may have multiple offices that handle these responsibilities separately. But having an institutional brand nowadays is typically the home for that is within the marketing communication office in terms of defining it and expressing how it is defined. And obviously there are many, many players at institutions, alumni, current students, faculty, administration that help define, and students that help define what your institution's brand is, what your story is. And that's a way I like to look at brand. It's another way of telling your story. Your story is another way of expressing your brand. So we look at the way people consume information these days, particularly our target audiences when we're talking about student recruitment. And frankly, it's online. It's on websites, it's on social media, it's on instant messaging, it's throughout conversations that they have with peers and colleagues around the world. That's how they define who we are and how we're seen. That's the other half of brand. It's what we think we are, but how our audience thinks what we are. So the brochures, commercials, billboards that universities put out, they oftentimes, and this is where it gets a little bit muddy, they're strikingly similar across the world. Inside Higher Ed had an interesting story on this where they compared some brands through brands that were putting very similar themed stories and were hiring out to third parties to create a marketing campaign for an institution around what they thought their brand was. And the reality was that there were very similar themes, hope and plans and dreams and all of these things, next steps and all of this that were seen across the globe in very similar ways. So how many ways can you distinguish yourself in two or three words as an institution? So what it really means, I think, in the realms of international education is the stories that you're telling and the reach those stories have online. And why online is where you have to have a regular presence, a reinforcement of messaging, a consistent theme throughout that. But it's important as part of that strategy is in diversifying your stories. So not the cookie cutter, we're preparing you for your future type of message that many universities have in one way or another. It's who are the best storytellers for your message, for in sharing with the wider world what your institution is meant to be and what your institution is with, and what it is frankly what your students and your alumni say it is, and their parents for your young students. Brands really are effective most when their stories relate to their intended audiences and their aspirations. And when you're talking about student recruitment, who better to tell those stories than someone that's here now studying at your institution, that is, you're trying to reach students in that student's home country or that student's region of the world or for that student's major, whatever it might be, using those stories from your current students to reflect your brand to your destination markets. And we talked about this, the value of testimonials, these student testimonials, and that you, the challenge is, I've been talking about that for years, having some sort of testimonial somewhere on your site. There may be the odd student in a YouTube video somewhere buried online, but it's very rare that you see these actively shown on your websites, on your regularly on your social media throughout Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, on the Chinese versions of those. If you're trying to reach local audiences there, that is the majority of institutions, frankly, don't have that, particularly from international students reflected on their sites, and that's a real challenge. How are you, if you're not capturing that information, your current students' testimonies, their stories about how your institution is changing their life and preparing them for the future in whatever way that is working for them, those are missed opportunities. Are you having successful alumni who are further removed from your institution but are the longer-term successes for your institution? Are they profiled in any way? Are you capturing that? And even current students' parents, if you have a parent strategy and all, you need to have their stories as well. And telling that, having them tell their stories is so much better than anything we in admissions or we in international recruiting could ever think we could do on our own. So having those brands is absolutely priority one, I think, for any institution that if you're looking to establish your brand or maintain your brand or build your brand online, you got to have those components to what you're doing. So really encourage you to take that to heart and really look at where we're going as a industry in international education, where our lives are online in terms of how we are reflecting who we are as an institution to our prospective student, parent, and outside audiences. So more of that to come, I'm sure, as we move forward. We may be in the next month or so, we might be having some sort of an article like this on country level marketing plans and how important those are in the overall success of building that brand, but also being more effective in what you do international student recruitment-wise. So more on that to come. Now let's shift gears and talk about the elephant in the room that everybody is dealing with in one way or another on their campuses. You may be working from home yourself today. And we've just had a number of universities in the last 24 hours jump on the we're closing or we're going virtual only through the end of the term. We first saw that beginning end of last week with the University of Washington in Seattle going completely online to the end of the quarter for them, which is towards the end of the month, so only 2 or 3 weeks away. Many other quarter-based institutions are following suit. They're just posted the link to on CNN to a number. It's from actually 2 days ago, so the numbers have changed. I haven't seen a more recent one. I saw a scroller running on another news channel that had at least a dozen more than I see on this list from CNN. The list I've just posted for CNN includes some big powerhouse schools, a lot of flagship schools. We're seeing Duke and UCLA, where Purdue, Harvard, Amherst, UC Berkeley, Columbia, Barnard, Hofstra, Ohio State here in Ohio. Also, I've also seen Kent State in Cleveland, where or outside Cleveland, where there were the first 3 confirmed cases in Ohio. So they're in that area. It's impacting all parts of life. Princeton, Seattle University, University of Southern California, UC San Diego, Stanford, University of Washington, which we talked about. A number of abroad programs have closed or have been had their students recalled. I've even seen, oddly enough, I've seen one institution I used to work at, Ball State in Indiana, where they have actually canceled summer and fall study abroad programs, which is seems a little bit interesting as far as that goes. But they haven't recalled their current students that are studying abroad. I know they have some programs in Italy, and they're on lockdown, primarily summer from Ball State. But it seems like some institutions are heeding the CDC warnings that we talked about last week, that their CDC is recommending or encouraging institutions to look at canceling study abroad programs. That seems to be happening on a lot of different levels. So I use close to, yeah, Purdue. Yeah, Purdue's on that CNN list. Marcy, thanks for jumping in on that. I hope you're well. That's Valpo. Are you guys thinking about closing there at Valpo? Let me know. Hope that obviously no cases there yet, probably, but certainly the impacts are still being felt around the globe. From colleagues who are in China now, they are reporting that cases have peaked and they're on the way down. A lot of major cities have had no increases in new cases in the last couple of days. So there's potentially light at the end of the tunnel there in China. The president of China, President Xi, is making a visit to Wuhan, the epicenter of the epidemic, the pandemic now. So maybe the signs of that getting under control, the obviously very draconian restrictions that were put in place to for travel and work in and schools in Hubei province were significant, and it's interesting to see. So Marcy is kind of expressed a concern, or not a concern, but a kind of a feeling that most in higher ed now on institutional campuses are dealing with now. We are prepared for everything, and isn't that the truth? So you have to be that these days. Lots of institutions are dusting off emergency preparedness plans and updating them for current circumstances. And it's going to be interesting over the next few days what might happen across other campuses, what that's going to mean. It's impacting here in Ohio. Both Biden and Sanders had rallies scheduled in Ohio and Cleveland yesterday, but they canceled those. Because of those new cases that popped up, the three in the Cleveland area. So there's going to be more like that as we've hit over 1,000 cases, confirmed cases in the United States now, along with the rising death toll, particularly in the West Coast. So we've got a city in outside New York City that has been quarantined, basically an exclusion zone, mile exclusion zone from that town center. It's a lot more popping onto everyone's radar as it relates to the impact of COVID-19 on our campuses. Two news stories covered this, covered a recent survey that IIE did with 234 colleges and universities responding, which focused on student mobility to and from China, where obviously COVID-19 began. It looked at the survey found, I'm just reading from first an Inside Higher Ed article last week, where a substantial number of colleges had not made alternative recruitment plans in response to restrictions on travel to and from China. I'm very much concerned if they hadn't made any plans. I know some of the plans they had have been canceled. A lot of folks online that I know on Facebook, they're talking about all spring travel canceled from their institutions. So some were on trips while this was happening and are just getting back. One of the things I one of my jobs now is putting together a recruitment tour for Davis UWC Foundation schools that are looking to recruit at United World Colleges in Europe and in Asia. And that this outbreak is putting those plans in jeopardy in terms of whether we'll go in the fall. This is late August through end of September, tours that and events that we have scheduled in Europe and Asia. So one of those stops is in Italy, and we don't know what we're doing yet on that front. It's we're still about a month and a bit before our deadline for deposits for that tour, so that's going to be impacted too. So for recruitment efforts, it's impacting what we do right now in the fall, and it's also going to impact what institutions are doing summer and fall next year. Or I'm saying it's impacting what we're doing in the spring here, but it's going to have long legs in terms of how it will impact us down the road, beyond this current semester. So most colleges also in this IIE survey said that that had very little current students from China that were impacted by this directly, that were already over in China and during the winter break, and maybe they had a late start in January and weren't able to get back after the travel ban came down. So it's going to be interesting to see. They represented those, interestingly, these there were, let's see, I think what the number was for students from China, that most had students directly reflected. 220, this was, here we go, 831 Chinese students enrolled at these institutions who had been affected of the 234 institutions that responded to the survey. This number reflects less than 0.4% of the total population of Chinese students studying at responding institutions. There was one institution that did respond that had a significantly larger number than that, 226 students at the University of Delaware, because they had a late start to their spring term. They weren't able to return, 226 students from China weren't able to return to the University of Delaware for spring term. So what the options that have been given to these students have been, we found that 46% offered options for remote or independent study if they couldn't return. 41% offered leaves of absence or deferred enrollment. 38% offered online or distance ed classes. 9% issued refunds. And 8% offered the option to study elsewhere. So that's for students that were either couldn't get back or were new students that potentially going to be starting in the spring term. So that was the Inside Higher Ed look on it. What we saw in the Pi News article was a little bit different take. Their article, I'm just posting a link to that on the Facebook page. Also talked about the less than 0.4% of all Chinese students at the 234 institutions that responded were impacted by this. What they also looked at is 19 of the top 20 hosts of international students from China completed this IIE survey. So it does give you a very good representation of the volume of students that those participating institutions that did respond represented 47% of the total population of Chinese students in the United States right now. So that should give you at least some encouragement that current students, and that was my take too when this first broke, is that for most U.S. institutions, you don't have a ton of students going home typically for a couple weeks at Christmas, the winter break, unless you have a longer gap at your institutions, like potentially University of Delaware. So there probably wouldn't be as much of an impact in the U.S. as is happening currently in Australia, where they still have over 100,000 international students or Chinese students that have been unable to return to studies to start their school year, which starts in February. So it's interesting to see where that goes from here. And it looks like Australia has actually ratcheted up their travel restrictions because of the expansion of the virus to other parts of Southeast Asia and Australia. So it's interesting to see what's coming next for them. But certainly from the recruitment side, it's going to have long legs. There's just no ifs, ands, or buts about it. A Chronicle story entitled Enrollment Headaches from Coronavirus and Many, and They Won't Be Relieved Soon. An excellent piece from Karen Fisher late last week. And that's, we now have got 77 countries or more that now are impacted by this. Her story focuses on Lehigh and a couple of other schools that are looking at the information that they have. They're looking at plans B, C, and D, as the their associate vice president, provost for international recruitment. That would be an important, that's Morgan Volkert and her admissions colleagues. Been having a lot of meetings, and I'm sure that's been going on a lot of campuses around the country. Obviously the main impact of this will be in China, but it's going to be beyond that. I know colleagues who've, as I mentioned earlier, have had to cancel spring travel. That's would have been travel designed to look at, to confirm interest in their institutions with applicants they might have met in the fall. It could be to build lay the building blocks for the next recruitment cycle. It could be admitted student events later in the spring. Those are all up in the air right now, if not canceled outright. And so what are the alternatives? What are institutions thinking about if we look at just as it relates to China? What may have been kind of a given that it was happening is that visa services in China for the U.S. have all shut down. The consulates and embassy have been closed since the outbreak really took gathered steam in February. So you're seeing now, beginning April, May, when we're talking the 120 days out when students can first apply from before their start dates, 120 days out from when they might be starting based on their I-20s, that they can first go for their visa appointments. That's going to be coming up in April, May. And when that door opens, particularly if you have STEM Chinese applicants that you've admitted and or will be admitting soon if you haven't already and issuing I-20s for, when that door opens, if the embassies open and consulates are open in China for visa appointments, there's already going to be a backlog of a month or 2 months of applicants that they're going to have to go through first. Are they going to be bringing on more staff to take care of that backlog and what the traditional summer rush for student visas? I don't know. A lot of ifs, ands, or buts out there, but you can feel very confident knowing that if you have a STEM student from China that you've admitted for the fall, chances are they're not going to be coming for fall. You're probably going to have to defer them to spring just because of the visa delays that those students have already been having onwards of 3 months or more because they fit into this administrative processing category now that has come up for Chinese STEM students. They'll still get their 5-year visa, but that's only when and if they do get it after all the background checks that they have to go through. So it's going to impact your fall numbers. If you're heavily China dependent, feel very comfortable saying to your boss that, hey, we're going to take a big hit this fall from China because our STEM students probably aren't going to be able to get their visas in time, even if they were able to apply on a regular schedule starting in May. If you're heavily China dependent, you're going to be looking at a big hole in your incoming class primarily from any STEM Chinese students that were already in your pipeline, already being admitted, that might have been issued I-20s to come. They're probably not going to get them. Hopefully you can get them in January, but that might be the alternative you need to offer. And some of the language coming out of some of these stories is a bit concerning from particularly some veterans like Ron Cushing down at University of Cincinnati. This, he says in this story, this to me is already more significant than anything I've had to deal with in my career. And Ron's been at it for over 20 plus years, primarily at Cincinnati, but he's certainly a big player in the industry. And certainly, the reality is what you're doing with Chinese students now in the recruitment cycle, you may be faced with some challenges you never thought you'd have to face. So I'm curious to hear from other colleagues at other institutions of what your plans are. Are you going to a more of a digital or a virtual strategy with Chinese students? Obviously, you might already have, if you've been active in China, you probably already have a presence on Chinese social media. And if you have anyone on the ground in China, are you doing anything with live events for them virtually on Weibo or Youku or wherever it might be on WeChat to help answer questions, to help at least be a sympathetic ear to their problems and their challenges and their concerns that they have? Obviously, students that are this late in the cycle that might have been trying to get in late, if you're more of a rolling admissions institution, if you were hoping to get a bunch of students from March to February, March test dates for SAT, ACT, or TOEFL, IELTS in China, those have all been canceled. We all know about those cancellations. We've talked about that last week. But there's some real concerns moving forward about what that's going to mean. So we'll have more on this, I'm sure, over the coming weeks as the realities of what's next for institutions become more clear. But I do want to finish with one quick story out of West Virginia. Marshall University took up with Intu, one of the major pathway providers here in the United States, back in 2013. They signed a partnership, and Intu's model is a long-term deal. It's a 30-year-plus deal where they come. Typically, they build a building on campus. That's the INTU hub for housing and academics and living environments. They had an initial jump on international students. They've graduated 700 international students through the program since 2013. They've enrolled 2,000 international students from 65 countries through the partnership. So there have been some positives there. And the challenge, though, is that they've come to quite a stumbling block. They've had a mutual agreement to dissolve the partnership effective July 31st this year, that their center will be closing, and students will be phased into university services, or they're going to looking at outplacement assistance for those students. So interesting to see that. There have been other pathway providers that have had some challenging times at institutions in Kentucky and Kansas, elsewhere, Navitas, Shorelight. So there's been some not successful partnerships when it comes to these pathway providers. So it's not going to be the silver bullet for every institution, clearly. And there seem to be some good signs of success for this partnership initially, but must have gone downhill pretty quick. So be interested to see how this kind of a story gets potentially exacerbated or worsens at other providers. I'm not sure if it will or not, but there's a lot of unknowns out there in the industry, as all of my colleagues that are on university campuses will know. So I do appreciate you being with us this week, and thanks again for checking in live and listening on the podcast or watching one of the repeats on our YouTube channel or Facebook page. Until next week, have a wonderful week.